Hello, I'm Eric Walenza, founder of IoT1, and this is the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Every episode, I interview one expert about a project that is impacting businesses today. Visit us at IoT1.com to learn more, or email me to start a discussion. Now we're going to deep dive into a couple case studies looking at B&R and Rockwell Automation. Oliver, let's kick off on the B&R case study. Can you give us a quick overview of what was the business challenge or the objective that you were helping to address? And then we can get more into the actual solution and the technology involved.
Yes, I'm very happy to do that. So thank you very much, Eric, for the introduction. So the use of protection, licensing, and security technologies in industrial automation offer benefits for multiple parties. So, and the main benefit and the main driver for integrating protection, licensing, and security in PLCs and their development tools is protecting the OEM's intellectual property. So the machine maker using a PLC in his machine, in his system, he wants to make sure that his USPs and his technology is protected against reverse engineering, against copying, and also that he can get new flexible license models for his products, for his machine. So selling a machine, selling a device, not as a one-time sale, but taking the chances of the new business models is a very important step. For example, let's have a look on machines that are creating air, pressure air. So in the past, they have been sold at a one-time fee, and the machine maker also sells maintenance and support for that. And that is changing today to really making a pay-per-use model and calculate and charging the user on the amount of air that is delivered by the machine. That's one sample. And to realize that in the controlling systems in the PLCs in such a machine, there must be a measurement for that, there must be integration that must be automated in the process, and that is something that B&R is providing for their customers. So they have integrated in the Studio 5 Star, in the Automation Studio, that's a development tool from B&R for their PLCs, they have integrated the option that the OEM using these PLCs can protect his software running on the PLC, and he can create many license models for that. He can enable or disable a software realized feature in a machine. He can use a pay-per-use mechanisms, really measuring the use, measuring then the power and the deliverable of the machine. He can do subscription models. He can very flexible do that for his products. So that's one of the major driver for integrating a protection technology in the development tools and in the controllers, that the OEM integrating these devices in his machines can benefit from these new opportunities and can also integrate it in his business process. But also the manufacturer of the PLC itself and the development tools like B&R in that case can benefit, because they can do licensing for some development tools, special development tool features in a flexible way, and they can also control runtime features in their PLC, like the number of X's in a X controller, like pay-per-use models for some runtime features in a PLC. They can make sure that they are conformed to export compliance requirements. If some sophisticated PLC features is subject to export restrictions, they can handle that so that they have control who can use it and how can it be used, and they protect their IP as well. So that's opens opportunities for the PLC vendor like B&R, and additionally for their OEM integrated in machines.
Yeah, that's a great example. I think it shows how interconnected technology providers, core technology providers like Weebu, are now becoming with the end users, in that you're now enabling new business models two steps down the line, in terms of the equipment owners and operators. What is the product development or the product consultation role then for Weebu? Are the solutions that you're providing, for example, in this case to BNR, is this more or less a plug-and-play solution where you have the licensing technology and you know more or less what their customer requires in terms of licensing and you're able to sell through? Or does it require consultation with BNR, potentially with their customers, and customizing of the solution you're providing to meet the needs, the licensing needs of this this end customer?
Yes, that's a good question. So in fact, we need all. We need the BNR customers or some key customers with key requirements. And because we are not expert in the automation industry, we are expert in our protection, licensing and security solutions, but not in the application of our customers. So we need them to understand that. Mainly BNR or Rockwell Automation needs to understand it. But we also need to understand it to help to implement it in the right way. And definitely it requires some kind of customization, because the final solution doesn't show up to the users or to the BNR customers as a Weebu CodeMeter solution where they have to integrate a lot of things. It shows up as a BNR solution or the Rockwell Automation solution. So they integrate it with their ERP system, with their SAP or whatever they are using. They integrate it in their e-commerce portal, in their platform, in the internet. And so it requires some customization. Of course, I would say it's all based on our standard basic product and technology, which is 90% of the solution, and 10% of the solution is then adopted and customized so that it's in the look and feel and is a perfect fit for the requirements. So one sample to that, which is used on a large-scale base, is a so-called content license portal operated by Rockwell Automation. And that is something, in the past, if a machine maker has developed his software to control his machine, within the development tools of Rockwell, the machine maker can specify for each piece of PLC code and data used in the control equipment who has the right to read it, who has the right to modify it, and so on. And that ends up in the past with a long list of passwords that have to be transmitted to service technicians that are in a factory in India or wherever and do some maintenance and do some special things. And of course, that's not convenient to handle this maybe 50 passwords for doing service on one machine or one factory. On the other side, passwords, if the same service technicians are going the same, often to the same factory, it's hard for them to hide it against the technicians of the customer and the service people in the factory itself. So they have changed it in a way that this rights to do the to access the content have been stored in our CodeMeter licensing system that can be software-based, based to a development PC, or it can be in a token, like a USB token, you know, from your online banking that the service technicians takes. And this rights for the to access and to use the content, they are distributed over a cloud-based solution. So the service technician somewhere in the world, when they get their service order, they automatically get the necessary rights for the content they need to read or need to modify, and they can get these rights in a time-limited way. So for example, after 1 week or after 2 weeks, they expire automatically again. And this cloud-based content license portal simplifies the usage and increases the security for the success. And that is a very good sample that will be coming more and more, because more and more data and content has a very high value in the production process that is handled by this control equipment. looking again into the, for example, additive manufacturing models, 3D printing, where most of the product definition is contained in the data.
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent example of a use of a cloud-based solution to radically reduce the complexity of a process, and the opportunity for error or for you could say criminal activity or malicious activity. I was speaking recently in China with a rather large German software company. They have a cloud-based solution. They've been having a very difficult time getting it adopted in China because of some of China's cybersecurity regulations. But I would say even globally also cloud, especially public cloud solutions, have had an upward battle because of the perception, perhaps the misperception, but in any case, the perception of their security concerns. What are you seeing in terms of the, let's handle this at the global rate, and then if you could also, I know you have operations in China, so if you could also address the market in China specifically, what are you seeing globally first in terms of the adoption rate for cloud-based solutions as opposed to your more typical solutions, and then if you'd also apply that question to China.
Yeah, I see increasing acceptance of cloud-based solutions, and sometimes people don't like to use a cloud-based solution, but sometimes it only the data protection argument is in many cases, in my opinion, it's said because they are not ready to use cloud-based solution and they want to have a good argument why they are not doing that. So I see a increasing acceptance, and I see also a decreasing risk when security mechanisms are implemented in the right way, because then what's most important for the cloud and for the cloud operators is that they are very reliable. So they must be up. They must be up 24 hours a day and continuously all over the time, so that from every location you can reliable access to your data anytime. That's important. But if you are using security mechanisms and storing data in the cloud in a protected way, keeping the keys for the data and for the content at your side, then you run no risk in case of data privacy or data protection. So that is something that is technically possible. Looking especially to China with the cybersecurity law, I'm not completely sure if I understood what's the impact for the future. But even a cloud solution at some point comes to a data center where the data is stored and where the data access is done. And if I'm looking at Vibu systems, we have, for example, our content management system and our system for our customers for technical support, for the website, for downloading the software. We have locally hosted that in China. We have a master system based in our headquarters in Germany, so synchronizing the data regularly, but having the solution for the Chinese market hosted in China so that we have a very reliable and very high-speed quality for our customers that access the system. And that might apply for many other systems as well. If there is personal data involved, there might be data protection requirements from the governments in Europe, in Germany, in the US, in China, and that is understandable. If it's going to licensing systems or industrial control or IoT management systems, it's not only a question of this legal requirements for personal data, but it's only also a question for reliability and performance that makes sense to have a cloud-based solution distributed in many areas, in several areas, and synchronized somehow if the synchronization is necessary.
That's a great point. Actually, I've had two conversations with companies, let's say, really $40 billion plus a year companies recently who are launching cloud-based solutions. And neither of them had a partner in China, but they were trying to enter the market. And the question for me was, was why, right? You have the resources, you have operations in China for the past 20 plus years, but you don't have a cloud partner in China. So I'm wondering whether there is a dissonance where the executives at headquarters simply don't understand the implications of the regulation and aren't working with their local teams to quickly set up a solution. It seems odd, I would say, but maybe I know this is a bit outside of your expertise. It seems like you're already doing the right thing. You have your local operations, you're syncing with headquarters. That's certainly best practice. I think there's plenty of strong partners in China, so no particular reason not to take that step. Oliver, can you give me a I know this is always difficult, but can you give me a high-level estimate of where we are today in terms of cloud security adoption? Are we looking at 3% or 5% or 8%, or are we looking up at 20, 30, 40% of the global market? Meaning, is this still kind of a niche technology that's being adopted, or are we already reaching the point where this is very widely adopted by companies for security specifically?
Yeah, that's very hard to say, and it very much depends on the use case. So there are consumer use cases that are very much cloud-based, of course. There are industrial use cases, some maybe as well. But I think we are still in the beginning. So I cannot tell you a percentage if it's 2% or 5%. If we are looking to our business with protection and licensing and license entitlement with our CodeMeter License Center, looking 2 or 3 years ago, Chinese manufacturers, doesn't matter if it's medical devices, if it's camera vision systems for supervision, or if it's game machines, nearly nobody asks for integration of this license deployment in the business process into their ERP system and to a cloud-based system. And today, every large company in China we are talking to, the integration into the business process is becoming the most important part. And these solutions are always going into an open public cloud, or they are operated by the large ISV or intelligent device manufacturer by themselves. But they want to have automated, want to have it integrated in the business process. Nobody wants to do that manually or ship something. It needs to be done over the internet. And that's a clear shift that we see. So the percentage of cloud-based solutions will for sure increase continuously in the next years.
Mm. Yeah, good point. Oliver, I was looking on your website. You have... I would say 50 plus case studies. You have a great library of case studies. I know you've been at this for over 2 decades. You've dealt with companies across every sector. As a last question, can you take a few minutes and share some of the lessons learned? What are some of the mistakes that you've seen customers make in terms of technology adoption and implementation? And what are the lessons that other companies can take away to try to avoid and simplify the implementation of security solutions as they digitalize their products?
Okay, several questions. Yeah, some of the mistakes that have been, or I don't know if it's mistakes, it has been different requirements maybe in the past. When we are coming from PC-based, office-based software licensing, in the past, it really has been a strict license enforcement. And so if the user has purchased 10 licenses, floating licenses for usage in a company, for example, if the 11th people need to work with the software, it simply has not been possible. It's strictly stopped. And it's a lot like protecting against piracy, while today it's changing. So changing in the way that the license models are much, much more flexible, and the manufacturers, device manufacturers, independent software vendors, they don't want to stop their customers using their products at all. So even if they are using more than they have agreed on in advance, normally today they want to allow the customer to use the product whenever necessary to the grade they need to use it, but they want to have the option to measure that use so that later this additional usage can be billed to the customer. So keeping it important is keeping it easy, making it flexible so that they can offer tailored products to the customers, they can be easily upgraded, and creating really benefits for all the sides. For the security, in the past, security is not a big issue because the systems are not connected to each other. They are running isolated. So if you have a fence around your factory, that's all what you need in security. And maybe you have some people taking care that nobody who is not authorized can come in. And then your machine is operating secure. Today, with Industry 4.0 and with a connected automated production process, security is necessary so that the systems are running reliable and open. So that is an important thing. Another change over the past years, I would say, is that we have been coming from proprietary solutions. Sometimes in the beginning of security, people did something like security by obscurity, so doing something complicated, keeping it secret. But that doesn't work, and in the past it has always been shown that security by obscurity is not working, and it can be much easier broken than it's developed. So relying on open standards, relying on evaluated mechanisms, publicly known principles, that's a very basic principle. And one sample I need to tell at the end is that we have developed with KIT, Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, 2 years ago and applied for a German Security Award, the highest award in Germany, with €200,000 in total, awarded from Horst Gerd Stiftung, about a mechanism that we call Prairie Box Cryptography. That's a software protection mechanism where all mechanisms are published. And nevertheless, under certain requirements, we claim that the security is that the protection is secure, and that due to the protection, there are no additional faults integrated into the product. And that is something we have started a hackers contest, so a public contest to break the security, that has been ended on last Friday. So it runs from May. And we have awarded €50,000 to break a small protected software application on Windows. And now let's see, by mid of June, or exactly by 20th of June, the jury will publish the results of the contest. And we are very eager to see if somebody has been able to break it or not. But nevertheless, how the result is, if we get no breaks, we will integrate these new technologies in our standard products. If we get some breaks, we need to understand them, improve it, and integrate them later in our standard product. But what I want to say, open and published mechanisms, that is the kind of security that is required for the future, so that auditors have a chance to understand the mechanisms and to audit the whole security solution. Yeah, so, yeah.
Great, Oliver. I think that's a great stopping point. Actually, I think very appreciative of your approach to open source security. Maybe as a final point, you said in June 20th. How can our listeners learn about the results when these are published? Where will these be published?
Yeah, they can have a look on our website for the hackers competition. That's www.blurrybox.com. Blurrybox is blurrybox.com. Or, of course, they can have a look on www.wibu.com on our company website. where we will publish the results of the contest as well.
All right. Oliver, thank you so much for sharing. I think a fascinating topic. I would say certainly top three topic for industrial IoT is securing these solutions as they come to market. I think you're doing excellent work there. So thank you for sharing your expertise. It's very much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you, Eric, for the discussion and the opportunity. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. We help to accelerate digital transformation by advising business leaders on how to integrate IoT technologies into their operations and products. We appreciate your thoughts, suggestions, and of course your reviews, and if you have an interesting project, we would love to feature you on a future edition. Write me at eric.walenza@iot1.com.